We have joining us on the telephone right now Mark Hobb, and Mark is a professor of nutrition at Kansas State University. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Mark.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Oh, nice to have you.
My pleasure.
You've been a little busy with interviews here, I believe, since the article came out.
Yes.
I understand that you were on the television earlier in the day. And
actually, they rescheduled me for the same issue that you were dealing with prior to this conversation.
And, of course, the issue we're talking about is an issue involving nutrition, which I guess it sure should be, as it is your field. And you've decided to spend 30 days eating nothing, well, not quite nothing,
correct,
mostly nothing but junk food.
Correct.
And here I am thinking, well, a professor of nutrition deciding to eat junk food, just, you know, it just doesn't. It doesn't grab me as making sense right away.
Correct.
How did you come to this idea, from the field you're in and
sure.
teaching it on a regular basis, and here you are eating those things that we all think are bad for us?
Yeah, great question. It's multifaceted. One, on a simple level, I teach an energy balance class or an obesity class at an undergraduate and graduate level. So on the surface, it's one thing where it's kind of simply altering energy intake, energy output to shift body composition one way or the other. Some people do want to gain weight, such as those people that exercise a lot, or lose weight. So that's one level. When it gets more complex, you get into things like food deserts and situations where some people in inner cities or even in some rural areas, they may not have access to what many people consider healthy options. And then, an alternative is we have a message of what is healthy. Our local paper at the university came out with an article, and they interviewed somebody from the community who I actually know, and they made a comment of, well, anybody can lose weight, but it should be healthy weight loss. And so, that kind of got me thinking, what's healthy weight loss versus weight loss when the outcomes are, in my case, I'm measuring cholesterol, blood pressure, and some basic cardiovascular markers of health. If those things improve, is that not what we're aiming for? And so there's, and the foods that I'm eating are relatively inexpensive. And so with the economic situation we happen to find ourselves, they're foods that people that on limited income, and I've talked to one of our professors is from Chicago and is well aware of some socioeconomic issues and food purchasing in those groups. That's kind of the foods they go for. So trying to figure out on this kind of complex level, is there a place for this? What if we meet basic nutrient intake, that is, we meet our needs for vitamin C, vitamin K, water-soluble, fat-soluble vitamins, and metals and micronutrients, does it really matter where we get our fuel from or the macronutrients? So that's kind of the synopsis of kind of where things go. So when you boil that down into a question, you have a means to an end. So you have diet to lead to health outcomes. And so when you kind of pare it down to the basics, is the means more important than the end? So that's kind of where things kind of have fallen.
Now, Mark, early on in that conversation, you mentioned food desert. What were you referring to? Is that just an area of our society where people can't afford good food, or what were you referring to?
We typically, in Kansas, I'm sure Minnesota has similar regions in which, in rural areas in particular, and tightly, really condensed areas in urban populations in which, there may be a, like for the urban, for example, highly populated, but there may not be adequate of what people might consider healthy food or grocery stores where produce might be able to be purchased. And in the rural areas, there may be miles, less densely populated, but there may be miles between an individual and a grocery store. And so being able to plan and go to the store and grab something you may want to eat produce-wise may be more difficult. In either case, there may be food available. But I was in Chicago recently, and there was basically a Dunkin' Donuts on every corner. And so, you know, if that's the food option that's closest, that may be what people choose to do versus, you know, walking another mile to get to a 7-Eleven, Costco, or something else that may have produce in it that might be or typically is considered more healthy.
Mark, before we get further along in the nutrition part of this, maybe we ought to talk a little bit about just what you were eating or have been.
Sure. Yeah, I would consider myself average from a faculty member perspective, not really a nutrition perspective. So, when you think about people with typically a higher education, they tend to eat a little bit healthier, but that doesn't mean I was necessarily eating the healthiest. But we eat a lot of berries, a lot of fruits, some vegetables. I have two young boys, and so those vegetables tend to hinge around what they want, unless my wife and I want something extra like asparagus that they tend to not eat so much. And then, you know, the main focus, and it's been my research focus academically, is dietary fiber. And so I typically try to find foods that have more than 5 grams of fiber per serving when it's a carbohydrate or a grain source. I mean, the downside for my diet prior to this was I also like, we're in a cattle state, and so I like that on occasion, and I probably like it on too many occasions. But leading into that, you know, when I did my baseline blood work, you know, I was borderline hypercholesterolemic, and my HDL levels were low, indicative of higher risk for cardiovascular disease. I typically will exercise in the summer more than I did this summer. There were some things, I had a mini sabbatical that I went on in which it took me out of my routine, and so I wasn't able to get the physical activity I normally get in during the summer. So there were some other lifestyle shifts that kind of affected that. Plus, I was living out of a suitcase for a month, and then about 2 weeks after I got back is when the study started. So there could have been some carryover from that type of a lifestyle that may have pushed things a little higher than what they might have been had I not done that this summer.
And now, instead of eating the fruit and the high fiber that was in your diet previously, you're eating like Twinkies and Krispy Kremes, or just what is it that you've been...
Typically, a typical day is a snack cake of some sort, usually in the morning, or the dreaded sugared cereal with whole milk. I guess to back up, I limit my caloric intake to about 1,800 calories, which is about 600 to 900 calories below what I need, depending upon physical activity, at least as estimated. So I have a snack cake and milk, or sugared cereal and milk for breakfast, or maybe a toaster pastry. And so it's basically 400 calories for breakfast. The one thing I probably will never give up is coffee, unless there's something that happens, and so I have coffee as well. So that's the breakfast, about 11-ish. I teach it around noon, so I don't really get a typical lunch hour. I'll have another snack before class, and either a diet soda or milk or a pre-mixed protein shake that you can get at your grocery store. Typically, and then around 3, I'll have another snack cake and milk or diet soda. And then for dinner's where, when I come back home and I'm with family, that's where the vegetables come in, and I typically have a large serving of vegetables for dinner. And, you know, from my perspective, I will not recommend this, and I don't promote it, and that's why I try not to eat this stuff in front of my family, in front of my kids especially. So, it's not like I'm trying to be irresponsible and do things that may be harmful. It's an academic exercise, and at this point, I don't think we know enough, and so I'm trying to, I don't want to deal with those issues with my kids who are almost 6 and 3. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure they're able to handle some of the level of discussion that might lead into.
So basically you're eating 1,800 calories a day,
yep.
Mostly in junk food.
Correct.
And that's less calories than you would normally be eating to maintain your level of activity, which is what's leading you, and we didn't mention this, I don't believe, on air yet, but it's led you to lose 10 pounds so far.
Correct.
Since August 25th.
Correct.
And the idea being that people can lose weight even eating junk food.
Yeah, and there's been some, even some of my friends and colleagues who are concerned about the message going out. Well, this is just going to let everybody have free rein to say, well, you know what? He did it. He's a nutrition professor. He can just go grab. I can just go grab a Twinkie too. And the issue is, I liken this. I don't know if I'm taking this out of context too much, but to a vegetarian or vegan diet in which you really have to work to get all the nutrients in. And so it's not one of those things where I'm just simply eating ad lib, gorging myself, or not paying attention to the nutrients that I am getting. I track everything that I eat via livestrong.com, the Lance Armstrong Foundation group, to track calories, to track nutrients, to make sure throughout the day I'm at or really, really close to 100% of the RDA. And so it's not like I'm just, well, I'll just have a Twinkie this time, a Star Crunch here, and not be cognizant of the potential downturn of not meeting the essential nutrients.
So far, what has your blood work shown? Have you had some deficiencies that you can relate, or have you been able to maintain levels that you previously had in a positive outcome?
Right. This originated as a class project for one of my undergraduate courses of juniors and seniors. And so I wanted some blood work to get outside of just weight and body composition. And so I did measure cholesterol, triglycerides, lipoproteins and blood glucose, excuse me. So that's the only blood work I have. Had I known this was going to be of greater interest, I would have added some more to get a broader picture of health outcomes, getting at, you know, some of the inflammatory markers that are pretty popular to do now, like C-reactive protein, measure some of the vitamins to ensure that vitamin levels are not getting too low, to verify the RDA intake. But with cholesterol, with the data that I do have, I came in, before I started, I was borderline hypercholesterolemic and had low HDL. So I was at 214 milligrams per deciliter for total, 153 milligrams per deciliter for low density lipoprotein or LDL. And my high density or HDL was 37 milligrams per deciliter. So on two of those markers, or three, LDL is also high. You know, I was at risk. In 2 weeks, and this is where, you know, my assumption going in or hypothesis going in was eating fewer calories than I expend and meeting the RDA would lead to improvements in cardiovascular disease risk. That was kind of my hypothesis. What I was not expecting at 2 weeks was the magnitude of change. And it was almost textbook, and that's something you rarely see. And by textbook, I mean all those things improve. Usually you might see, you know, one go down a little bit, another one go down a little bit, another one either go in the other direction or not change. And so that was actually surprising.
So really what we're hearing is that as long as you remain with your essential nutrients in a diet, the important thing is to lower your calorie intake and lose weight.
Well, and that's, you know, it seems that simple, you know, and I've learned things as I've gone through these 2 weeks. I really didn't pay much attention to it. And what I've thought to myself and have dialogued with others is, you know, why do we eat fruits and vegetables? Do we eat them for nutrients? And if so, can we get those nutrients from a supplement? I'm not saying it's better than eating the whole food, but if you can, you can potentially eat fewer calories by getting the nutrients via a supplement than by getting them via the food. For example, cantaloupe, you know, the fruits in particular have more calories than some of the vegetables or even grains like corn and wheat. And so it may leave room for foods that Americans in general tend to choose to eat over the other foods that are deemed more healthy.
So really, when people hear this over the news, you know, this professor at Kansas State is losing weight on junk foods, their thought is, well, he's eating Big Macs and fries every day, but that's
right.
Not really
no,
it.
No, I don't, those are not on my diet. I do eat, just because of my
You don't
my
only boys, get one meal a day that way.
Yeah, basically. I do eat hot dogs, but it's I had one tonight because it was my son's birthday party. And I had cakes on my diet, so that was a nice plus on my end.
Yeah. You're picking the things you like anyway.
Yeah, But so I do eat hot dogs on occasion, you know, maybe two a week. I talked to a class this morning. It was fantastic. So one reason I love students is they're thinking, and it's awesome to watch the light bulbs go off when they kind of understand something. But I told them, if I were to rephrase this diet and called it a lacto-vegetarian diet, would it have caught the attention that the diet has now caught? And they said,
of course not.
No. But the foods are no different. Mm-hmm. Because, it's milk. The snack cakes are not animal-based. The low cholesterol, there may be some animal fat in them. So I'm not going to go as far as saying vegan. But, it puts a different spin on the perception, and it's simply a word choice, and semantics of what it's actually being called. So it's an interesting play. Plus, if you look at the sodium intake and the cholesterol intake, they're low and lower than what's recommended. So it's an interesting. It's been a learning experience for me as well. I've learned many things, so that's been a plus.
Now, next month, if I understand right, you're going to try to gain some weight back by eating vegetables and fruits.
Correct. Thankfully, I have some time before I have to commit to that.
Okay, I see.
As I've gone through these discussions with people, across the United States, some people, there are some critics out there who don't necessarily agree with what I'm doing, and one of the criticisms is it's only 4 weeks. What can you show in 4 weeks?
We're talking also about an industry that must be into the billions, and that's the diet industry, and they may not like this.
No, and that's, from a an academic perspective, from a faculty perspective, that's one of the things when we talk, we have people who go on to be dietitians in our department, and one of the things that I discuss in my class is it ethical to prescribe a diet that has a roughly 95% failure rate? And so you're prescribing something pretty much, unless somebody's exceptionally different than the norm, it's not going to work. And so what we're prescribing now, in a matter of weeks or months, the people go back either to what they're eating or switch to something else, but it's not deemed as healthy. And so you have that conundrum as well is, okay, so what we're doing now isn't really working. Can we do something else that may offer them an opportunity to improve health? It may not, but it's a tool, much like the low carbohydrate diet was a tool. It's lost some interest, if you will, over the past 5 or 6 years, but some physicians still use it as part of their management.
Well, there is a movement afoot and has been for some time to try to bring healthier foods out to people in general and to cut down on the kinds of empty calories that we find in many of the things that you're eating right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Will this study that you do kind of stick some darts out there that the other side can use?
No, I think, from my perspective, we did some work with low-carbohydrate diets and grain-based diets and lower-fat diets, and my perspective is, here you have an individual who's potentially unhealthy, depending upon what their clinical markers are, mental markers. Is there something we can do to help that person? If it's eating an Ornish, Dr. Ornish-type diet that focuses on fish and low-fats and fruits and vegetables and using the local farmer's market, fantastic. If you have a scenario in which that's not readily feasible due to either cost or location, is there something else they can do? Because right now there's really no alternative. The push is for whole foods, locally grown, and in some places that's not readily possible for either a financial reason or location reason. Are there ways to improve that, either lower the cost or make them more financially feasible or make them more readily available? Certainly. How long is that going to take? I don't know. In the meantime, this may be an option. There needs to be more information, but it's interesting.
Maybe it has to be a Little Mac with three fries.
Or portion size. And if you look, I don't know if you're familiar with Fathead, the movie. It came out shortly after, but I think it came out last year. And it's basically in response to the Super Size Me movie by Morgan Spurlock. And he did exactly what you just mentioned. He reduced the portion size, all fast food, and he basically did the same thing that I'm doing with kind of quote-unquote junk food or snack foods.
So, whoops. I'm sorry, we hit
That's okay.
The engineer who's also speaking to you just hit the wrong button, so I apologize for that.
Oh, no problem.
Whenever I read or hear about diets out there, my first thought always goes back to, well, just what my mother said, you know, eat your food groups and just eat, a wholesome diet, just smaller portions.
Right.
And is that what you were referring to when you said, well, there's 95% of the folks who use that diet fail?
In essence. I think that the big issue that we're losing track of, and when the quote-unquote, I'm just going to call them fad diets, come through, they try to attach something that the consumer wants, i.e. no exercise or eat as much as you want, as opposed to really addressing the issue. And in my opinion, the real issue is portion size. And as long as you're meeting the basic nutrients, I'm not sure it matters if your fuel's coming from a small cheeseburger and water at a restaurant, or you go with a salad and a fat-free dressing.
Whatever it is, as long as it's balanced and you get all of your requirements, it should work.
That's the basis in my professional opinion.
You know, Mark, I'm afraid we have to leave it there. We're running out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining us and continuing your diet. How much longer have you got?
Just shy of 2 weeks, at least as it stands right now.
Wow, so there goes another 10 pounds.
Well, we'll see. I'm still overweight, though, so
okay.
To go.
Well, we're going to keep checking and just see how it all ends up. Mark, thanks again so much.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.